Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
One of the end zone caught. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Hi again, everybody. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live here from the Giants Training Complex in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Giants are getting ready to go out to the practice field as they continue preparations to take on the Washington Redskins on Sunday here at MetLife Stadium. And as a reminder, it is Toys for Tots Day here at the Meadowlands on Sunday. The Giants will be collecting new unwrapped toys. The U.S. Marines will be staffing the gates outside the stadium. So please, by all means, be generous if you can. Bring some new and unwrapped toys to the U.S. Marine Corps as they, again, they'll be at the gates to collect them and pass them out to many worthy youngsters throughout the metropolitan area. This is something the Giants have been doing, I think, Roman, since even before you came here to play, back in the 80s.
No, I remember when we would do it. We even have a space in the locker room where guys could bring toys and or whatever monetary donation through their foundations or whatever. So, you know, and every organization does something. But I think when you have that long history of helping and serving the community, it shows that you really care about the things outside of the X's and O's, so to speak, or outside of football. But the people at this time of year that all deserve to have a good holiday season, as you know, Paul. I mean, I would it'd be safe to say that most players in the locker room are going to have good Christmases with their families and coaching staff.
We're all very fortunate.
Yeah, we all are. And but there are a lot of people who are not. So make sure you go out there and support the toy drive for sure.
Absolutely. So when you drop off the toys on your way into the stadium, you get ready to see the Giants and the Redskins in NFC East battle, which, as you know, the Giants won down in Washington 45-14 back in Week 4. It was one of their three most complete and impressive wins of the season. I would also chalk up the Tennessee game and the Houston game as the three games the Giants really played very, very well. And so, Roman, I think we should go quickly over the injury report before we go into our phone calls and our Twitter comments. By the way, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get to us online, or call us up at 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Let's look at the Giants' injury report. Not participating yesterday, James Brewer with a concussion, Jaquan Williams with a concussion, Jameel McClain with a knee injury. However, he's been sore now for a couple of weeks, Roman, and coach did say he expected him to practice today.
Yeah, and again, sometimes that first day back, the Wednesday off, where you're just limited, but you're doing a lot of things in terms of riding a bike or doing some of those aggressive things to get your muscles back in shape. And then Thursday, you try to do as much as you can from a football standpoint, Friday being a half a day, Saturday really being more rest, and it tries to enable you to play on Sunday. And, you know, and I hate to bring up, you know, Beason, but the games that Beason did play, you saw that Wednesday off, Thursday, try to go as much Thursday, Friday half a day, then the rest just to try to play Sunday. So I think Jameel McClain is a guy that he's had a decent year for the Giants, and I know that linebacker core, especially because Jaquan Williams is still out. You know, Beason is a guy that can contribute and help this linebacker core.
I want to mention this because he's been playing with a nicked-up knee now for a few weeks. And over the course of the last 5 weeks, Jameel McClain has had 14 tackles against San Francisco, 5 against Dallas, 9 against Jacksonville, 8 against Tennessee, had a sack last week, had half a sack the week before. Despite playing on a gippy knee with fewer practice snaps, he's come to play.
Yeah, he has. And I think a lot of people, one of the questions I would always get, Paul, is, man, how do you feel, man? How do you feel Monday morning when you wake up? You know, how does an NFL player feel? And I said, you're not 100% as soon as the season starts. I mean, training camp, you can have something that lingers. You're always having something that lingers 2 or 3 weeks. And I think now the NFL and teams have gotten a lot better, and Giants probably leading the charge in terms of really protecting the guys, making sure they're good to go on Sunday and making sure the doctor's clear versus, hey, coach, I'm going to try to go. Okay, all right, you go out there. And then so there is a better mechanism in terms of reporting injuries and how those things are treated from the Giants, probably better than any team in the league that I've been on. But, again, if Jameel McClain can go, he's been cleared by everyone, not just he feels good and he's going to try to go. I mean, you hear about these teams that, you know, game day decision – if you can play, you know you can play probably by the 24 hours before the game. You know, I think sometimes that game day decision stuff, you don't see the Giants doing that a lot. I think they really know who they're going to scratch and who's going to play. But, again, to beat this Redskins team and be the second year in a row sweeping the Redskins, and, you know, whatever it is, it's a battle for third place in the division. But at least the
right now,
team can feel good
win.
About something. Yeah, winning 2 weeks in a row is something this team hasn't done. And in terms of that front seven, I mean, the Redskins have their issues, other sides of the field, but the offensive line and defensive line are pretty daggone good. So,
yeah,
in terms of the front seven, look at how Devin Kennard is playing, how some of these young guys are responding now. I mean, Kuhn had a touchdown last week. I mean, this defense is really coming together, and you hope that McClain can at least take off whatever rest he needs, but at least today, tomorrow, and just really prepare to play on Sunday.
And, Roman, you'll notice it's now 12:07. We've gone 7 minutes into the show without mentioning Eli Manning. everybody else wants to make a big headline out of this. They want to make a big story out of it. Okay, Eli Manning was on the injury report. See, it says right here, limited in practice, Eli Manning back. Okay, let me tell you the true story. True story is he took a few snaps off, and Ryan Nassib took a few of those snaps. And Eli said after practice, look, Nassib had a few snaps, no big deal. I felt fine. I watched him in the media portal show to practice yesterday. He looked fine to me. Yes, he did take a hard shot in Tennessee last week, and he was a little bit sore. But this is Eli Manning, folks. Okay, Roman, what did we talk about yesterday on the MSG show?
164.
Regular season consecutive starts,
yeah.
Third all-time among quarterbacks behind Favre and his brother Peyton. Look, Eli Manning, okay, folks? Eli Manning, don't worry about him not playing in this game. So, I'm not making much out of this one at all.
Yeah, and I think because of this era we live in, Paul, where it's, you know, you talk about like DraftKings and fantasy football and you know, the injuries. I used to always question why the injury report was so important. And I used to, as a player, I said, well, it's because of gambling, because they want to make sure that no one has an advantage.
Oh, it's fantasy now.
Yeah, now it's because of fantasy. You want to make sure if you got to make a change on your fantasy roster. I don't play fantasy, but you know you want to make sure you can get as many points if a quarterback's not going to play. So, I mean, it's gone from because of the line and how it affects Vegas, and now it's more about fantasy.
Right.
So how these injuries or who did or did not practice is a lot more prevalent.
All right. The other limited participant in practice yesterday was Mark Herzlich, he with a concussion. Now, I want to touch on the linebackers for just a second, Roman, before we get to the phone calls. And I know a couple of guys are on hold. We'll get to you in just one second. But I want to touch on this because I think it's very relevant. Devon Kennard, who has had back-to-back two sack games for this team, he is the typical guy who you want to have come into a system. He pretty much watches the first half of the year as a reserve, plays special teams, kind of gets his feet a little bit under him, kind of gets a feel for what it's about to be in a pro locker room. And then when he gets the opportunity, he makes the most of it. There is no question he has made the most of his snaps. Tom Coughlin's thrilled with his progress. I'm telling you, he's playing like a veteran, Roman. And that's what you – Odell Beckham, same thing. He's playing like a veteran. And I think, you know, the frustration with a lot of folks when they talk about draft picks and stuff is that they don't want to be patient. Well, sometimes you get really lucky, and draft picks don't need a whole lot of seasoning. Sometimes they're really that good as rookies, and these are two of those guys.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you remember, Paul, I didn't play a lot in my rookie year. I did a lot of field goal, third tight end, you know, on goal line, that type of thing. My second year I started, it took me to – starting for about three full seasons, you know, I didn't miss a game my first. Until you've seen everything a team can do, you recognize that the game slows down to you a little bit. But when you show flashes as a good young player, now that learning curve is accelerated because now you go from I should be playing and I deserve a shot in this league to now you're NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Or for me, it's you know, shutting down Bruce Smith or John Randall in a playoff game.
It's that moment, you know, when you say to yourself, I belong.
I belong. And then now you become a professional. Now you start to get better. And I think Devin Kennard has seen that. And,
yeah.
And it, you know, the irony, and I, you know, we're not getting calls about playing other guys, but we were answering questions all season about Ryan Nassib, give him a shot, you know, give Corey Washington a shot. There's four rookies on this draft class that have made significant contributions. Obviously, Richburg at center. Andre Williams had his first 100-yard game. We've been talking about Odell Beckham every week. He's player of the year, or the rookie class, if you ask me, and then Devin Kennard. So they drafted these guys because these guys were all four-year starters in college, a lot of productivity. These guys are used to playing football. There are not a lot of projects in this draft. Wait, this guy could be good in 2 or 3 years. So, and I think the case of a guy like Devin Kennard, he was a steal. I think he was a fifth-rounder.
Fifth-rounder.
Because you didn't know, you know, John Beeson, where he was going to be, you know, he's healthy. But he's a guy that I go back to training camp. Coach Coughlin said in our production meeting, Paul, that sometimes you got to tell this guy to take it a little easy because he's trying to hit everybody in practice. But for a guy that played in the 90s, I appreciate that. I can't say enough good things about Kennard. And you know, I remember watching him in college. I said, this is the kind of guy that would go to the Steelers and become like one of their next lineage of guys. But he ended up becoming the Giants. So, you know, Giants fans have asked for a solid linebacker, you know, a la Jesse Armstead, really a homegrown guy, not you know, Boley or Pierce or guys that came in from other teams, but a homegrown linebacker. This may be the answer.
In the 4 games that Kennard has started since being given the opportunity because of injuries, okay, he has combined for 23 tackles, 4 sacks, and a forced fumble. That's impact right there.
And those when you read those stats, oh, that's great. When you read those stats and say rookie, first-year player,
yeah,
then that's even more compelling. So, again, I'm really happy with you know, what they've done to this point. And it also, we don't talk about the future as much. I know some of the callers may have some things to say, but it also gives you optimism that this team is not that far away from getting back to a 12-4, a 13-3. I mean, you don't have problems at the quarterback position like most teams in the league. You've got a solid rookie class that's contributing. Injuries, you know, and I was going to read this. I mean, injuries have been a factor this year. I mean, all these guys on IR.
You get a whole newspaper full of injuries. I don't want to go there anymore.
I mean, you got to open the whole paper and look at all the injuries we've had. But, again, it's there's some things you feel good about. And, you know, despite the record, you can't go back and, Cruz and Bees and all these guys. I mean, you can't go back 7-8 weeks. But I think you can feel good about the direction in terms of where other teams are in the league. Look, Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Giants, but I think they're still having some questions answered on that team. There's some teams in the league, Buffalo Bills. I mean, there's some teams that, you know, maybe the record might be similar or even better than the Giants at this point in terms of the totality of it. They're not that far away from where they really need to get to that championship level.
Roman, the key is the Giants still have a franchise quarterback.
100%.
And that's a really big deal.
That's
a really big deal.
That's where it starts.
All right, let's go to the phone calls. 201-939-4513. Lewis from North Carolina. You're first on the show. Hello. Hello, Lewis. Did we lose Lewis? I guess we lost Lewis. Could we go to J.D. from North Carolina? You're first on the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, Roman, and, of course, P-Dot. You're definitely the man.
Thank you.
So at this point in the season, like most fans, I'm watching the remaining games with more of a focus on next year, of course. And looking ahead to 2015, I think if you're just kind of to break it down, offense, defense, I think offense, if Victor Cruz comes back, I think you're almost set on offense with what we've got with the emergence of Odell Beckham. And, I mean, aside from picking up some, obviously we have to focus on the offensive line at that point. But if Victor Cruz can return to form, I think that's pretty much all you have to do is reinforce the O-line. But before I get to defense, I just had a quick question, and I hope I can get an opinion from both of you guys. If you were going to build, let's say, an expansion team, and you're going to build, you know, your entire defense from scratch, where the NFL stands and where the players are coming from college at this point in time, do you think it's easier to build a 3-4 or a 4-3 based on that right now?
I think because you have and I haven't really scrubbed the draft yet. I don't do that until right around February, you know, when all the football is kind of over, then you get into like Senior Bowl mode and really starting looking at these drafts.
Sure.
I order all my pre-draft reports. I think because you have a lot of hybrid linebackers now versus, you know, in the old days you just had pure 3-4 guy. If you can't rush the passer, if you can't cover, you could at least be a good inside linebacker, you know, tackle to tackle,
right,
filling the gaps. If you had some pass rush ability, you could play in a traditional 4-3 as a weak side linebacker, or you could play a 3-4 on the line of scrimmage. A guy like Devin Kennard, who we just mentioned, he's a guy that can kind of do it all. And he's got the size, 6'3", 250 pounds, that he can line up and rush on third down. He can play inside and can play outside. So in terms of the college game, you're having a lot more linebackers that are good in coverage in the zone to a certain degree. But, you know, football, just from a college standpoint, football has gotten so offensive friendly, and defenses aren't, you know, I've always said you need to kind of get defense back into football. But again, you've got to react. You've got to find the best package to keep guys on the field. You're seeing a lot of smaller guys. You know, 250 now in college is a bigger linebacker versus that, you know, when I was playing, you know, Tampa Bay Buccaneers always had smaller athletic linebackers, 220 to 230. Now most linebackers are a little smaller and more athletic. So it's really about what offense is doing is going to dictate what linebackers are going to have to do. But you're always going to have guys that are just freak of natures, guys that are big, that can run, that can cover and rush the passer. Those are the guys that kind of go higher in the draft. The other guys, you know, 75% of the other linebacking core really fall in that middle. And look, if you're a Big Ten guy, if you're from Wisconsin or Iowa, you're not the type of linebacker that comes out of an SEC school or Florida or a warmer team. Again, if you're a USC like Devin Kennard, you're more athletic, you can run more, you play in warmer weather, you're outside more versus that tough, hard nose, taking on fullbacks. Those linebackers don't really exist anymore. But again, I know scouting is really intricate, but again, it's always going to be now what offenses are doing, dictating what type of linebackers are coming out. I hope that answers your question.
JT, thanks so much for the call. I will just say this, Roman. Bottom line is you got to get a bona fide stud pass rusher. And whether he's a defensive end or an outside linebacker, you got to get somebody who you know can intimidate an offense and can force an offense into doing things that they don't want. Because really, that's what it's all about, Roman. If you know that you can get pressure on the quarterback, you're going to impact that other team. Bottom line. And so, does it matter if he's a stand-up guy or his hands in the dirt? You got to figure out your scheme based on the players you have. But if you have a pass rusher, a dominant pass rusher, you'll be able to figure something out. That's for sure.
Yeah, because balls are being thrown. I mean, the attempts, the average attempts per quarterback around the league has gone up. Speaking of stand-up guy, I think you're a stand-up guy, Paul. I just wanted to throw that in there.
6'1". He's a little taller than me.
In terms of your reputation, you're a stand-up guy.
Thank you.
No, but again, you're right. If you can rush the passer, but, you know, I'm putting more onus on the safeties now. I think the safety has become the new middle linebacker in the NFL because you've got to really captain, you know, the ship in terms of rolling the coverages. You've got to be able to play near the line of scrimmage and cover. You got to be able to, if they catch you in a package where you got to cover a slot guy or some of these basketball athletic tight ends that are coming out. I mean, I think the safety in the NFL has become the new linebacker. And you're seeing these bigger guys, 220, 225, you know, 215, that would have been, you know, just in the box safeties. Now these guys can run. I mean, guys have gotten more athletic, but the guys that are athletic and are solid football players are the guys that always separate themselves from everybody else.
201-939-4513. Roman, let me ask you a question before we go back to the calls. I guess, Lewis, we got you back. We're going to get to you in 1 second. I just want to ask you one quick thing before we go. Where do you think Kennard best fits for the Giants next season, assuming that Beeson's toe surgery went well and he's able to play again, and assuming that Jameel McClain still wants to be here and he's going to be part of the linebacking core? Kennard, to me, has certainly earned an opportunity to compete for a starting job, if not already has gotten his hands on a starting job. Can you play Kennard and McClain outside Beeson? Because it seems to me that while Kennard has this very, you know, versatile skill set, he's not a typical weak side guy.
No.
McClain's not a typical weak side guy. They're both strong side guys, and Beeson's a guy in the middle. So is it possible that they could play together?
It goes back to pass coverage, and I think Kennard is a guy, you know, a strong side linebacker. He's the guy that you're going to blitz. He's the guy that you're going to send. He's the guy that can really jam up those tight ends and just he's respectable, I think, in coverage. That's something that's going to continue to improve. If you have Beeson in the middle, if you go back to the other side with McClain, I think McClain's decent in coverage. I think he's a guy on third down. You leave him on the field with a Beeson inside. Maybe Kennard goes outside. I don't think Kennard's right now can play on every down. Maybe most of his sacks are coming on downs where he's blitzing or first, second down where it's a play-action pass. So I think he's a really good traditional strong-side linebacker, but that can blitz, that can play around the line of scrimmage, and that can jam a tight end to disrupt his route.
Of course, we're looking a little far ahead. Let's go back to the calls. Lewis, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello, Lewis.
How you doing today?
Good to talk to you.
All right. I got disconnected earlier, but
sorry.
I just got a general question about Giants draft pick for next year.
Okay.
The first question I had was, what pick do you think the Giants will probably get? And then with that pick, what do you think the Giants will look at? What position?
Well, let me just say this. With still a handful of games left to be played, they could fluctuate quite a bit. I mean, they could be anywhere in the top 5, in the top 10, in the top 12. You know, there are still games to go here. And it's not just what the Giants do, but it's also what do other teams in the league do. And that's going to affect your draft position dramatically. You know, the one thing that you don't want is to be like picking in the 8th spot when you target 7 guys who you really want. Don't want to be that one spot on the outside looking in. That I can tell you. But the truth of the matter is, if you're the Giants, and Roman, I'm sure you would agree with this, you know you're going to be in the top 15 for sure.
Yeah, I'd say 7 to 12 is where they're going to be.
Yeah, in all likelihood. Yeah. But that could be a big difference.
Right.
7 and 12 could be a huge difference,
right. Especially
if you're looking for a stud pass rusher. You know, 5 spots, that's a long way to go.
Right.
If you're looking for a stud offensive lineman, that could also be a long way to go because there are usually only a handful of those guys, if that many, who are the real elite pass rushers or offensive tackles. And you really need to be high if you're going to be able to grab one of those. Then the other thing is, and the Giants really don't do this, you always can think about trading down, which is not something they do here.
No, they don't. I mean, they value their draft picks, and they build through the draft. But, you know, at the very least, I think if you're picking at the top of every round, I mean, that's a bonus as well. You know, those first 10 guys are like the rock star picks, as I call them, the guys that are been through the college ranks. You see them on college game day of these shows, and then they're going to be the top 10 guys. But then once you get into that next tier, I mean, there's a lot of value. I mean, if you look at the linebacker position, the Derek Brookses of the world, Ray Lewis's, and those guys were all middle. Those are all guys drafted in the 20s. You know,
Here's what I will say. Really
have to, and I think sometimes you don't want to be in that top 5 because the last time the Giants had those, Cedric Jones, decent career, wasn't a Pro Bowler. Ike Hilliard, you know, fans' favorite guy. I mean, took a lot of hits in the middle, didn't become a Pro Bowler. You know, I think you really have to make sure you draft the guy you expect. The kind of productivity that Odell Beckham is having this season.
And he was a 12.
And he was a 12, exactly. You're in that top 15. You expect if the guy plays for your organization for, let's say, a decade, I mean, you're expecting 3 or 4 Pro Bowls out of him. I mean, you're expecting at least for him to be considered within the top 10, top 5 in his position.
Lewis, thanks for your call.
In the league.
Here's what I will say, Roman, and a long-time football personnel guy told me this some years ago, and I believe in it. I know George Young believed in it, and that's good enough for me, quite frankly, okay? I was schooled by George Young and Bill Parcells. I tell people that all the time, Tom Boyster and the rest of those guys from the Giants personnel department back in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, the things you have to have if you're going to build the foundation for a contender, these are the things you have to have, requirement. Franchise quarterback, a stud left tackle, a stud pass rusher. He could be an end or a linebacker, but you got to have a stud pass rusher, and you have to have a cover corner.
Yeah, of course.
Now, if you have those 4 players, okay, whatever you need to do to fill around them, fill around them. But if you've got those 4 players, you've got a real good chance to compete and to be something. So those are the 4 things that you want. Now, look, Giants got a franchise quarterback, Eli Manning. They've got a left tackle, Will Beatty, who's rebounded and played pretty well this year.
Right.
Okay? Pass rusher. We're not sure. Who's the stud pass rusher? You know, JPP isn't getting double-digit sacks this year, although he's got 7 right now. Maybe he'll still get over 10, but he's a free agent. You don't know if he's going to be back.
Right.
So that certainly would seem to be an area based on the formula the Giants need to get. And then the other thing is cover corner. Well, they got those. DRC's a cover corner. Prince is a cover corner. So out of the 4 requirements, Giants are probably, you know, the stud pass rusher might be the weakest of the spots. If again, you don't consider JPP coming back and you don't think he's going to have the kind of year that he had a few years ago.
Yeah, and let's say JPP gets 2 sacks this week and he managed to get 1 more between the Rams and the the last game against Philadelphia. I mean, it's 10 sacks, but I think if you're an evaluator, you're going to say, you know, you're going to look at that some of that loss of contain and some of those runs in the Seattle game. I mean, you're going to look at – I mean, now he's become a great run defender, so he's become more of a complete D-end. But in terms of the sack production, you didn't see the 15 sacks, and it depends on where they come from. I mean, I remember a long time ago, rest in peace, Derek Kansas City Chiefs, number 58. Derek Thomas.
Who, by the way, sold out on the run to get to the quarterback on every play.
Yeah, I mean, he played every down like it was third and 10. But you study him, and most of his sacks were at home.
Yes.
With the crowd noise. I played against Jared Allen when he was in Kansas City. As he started to get, better, I mean, he had most of his sacks at home. A lot of these defensive ends, Dwight Freeney, playing in domes, they get most of their sacks at home. So it's okay to be streaky with sacks. I mean, and you don't want to criticize JPP for getting his sacks against teams that, that you should get sacks against. But, I mean, you'd like to see in terms of these guys that get the $100 million contracts, and you look at what J.J. Watt is doing, and even Ndamukong Suh is going to deserve a hefty salary from a team or his own team or another team in terms of complete defensive players. I mean, this team has seen some complete defensive players, a la Michael Strahan, Lawrence Taylor, guys like that. I mean, Jesse Armstead never left the field, complete guy. This team doesn't draft Jason Taylors, who a pass rush guy, a guy at the end of his career played five more years just playing on third downs. I mean, look what OC Umeor is doing in Atlanta right now. He comes in on third down, rushes the pass, and he gets 15 snaps a game. But in terms of a complete defensive end, when you go out there in free agency and you say, look, I deserve a 75, 100 million, whatever that number is, I don't know what that number is, but you got to be a complete player. You've got to be someone that really represents the franchise and that, deserves that investment of taking a major chunk of the salary cap for your abilities.
No doubt. It's funny, while you were talking about guys who get their sacks, and I've often been critical of guys who sell out. I mean, Kevin Green was another one who sold out against the run very often just to go get the quarterback because he wanted the glory for it. Derek Thomas is another one that comes to mind. Simeon Rice was a total sellout at defensive end.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, this guy had 125 sacks. And I mean, he averaged 10 sacks a year his entire career, but I play with him in Tampa. I mean, but he... On third and 10, you wanted him, but on first and 10, you're like, oh, just kind of get in the way and let Brooks and everybody else make the play.
So while you were talking about that, you're right. Home crowd and using that to your advantage is interesting. So I figured I'd look up Lawrence Taylor's stats.
Let's do it.
Just for the heck of it. And Lawrence Taylor, now again, remember his first year with the Giants when he had 9 sacks as a rookie doesn't count because the league didn't start counting him until the year after. So they're saying officially, according to the Pro Football Reference numbers, 86 regular season games and 132.5 sacks. They got the breakdown for Lawrence, 59 sacks in 40 games on the road. That's well over a sack a game.
Oh, yeah.
And 73.5 sacks in 46 games at home, which is certainly a bigger average, but there's not a huge disparity there. I'm going to look at Derek Thomas right now. This is a very interesting exercise you're giving me here, Robin.
Yeah, hey,
I appreciate this. See, folks, sometimes you learn things, even though you're an old-timer like me. This is cool. Derek Thomas, and I believe everything you just said. Now, maybe the numbers aren't going to prove us out.
And it might have been that season, that 98 season, or the few seasons that I played play against them.
But I firmly believe this. Let's get a look at this. Oh, it's not even close. On the road, 42 sacks in 42 games. At home, 84.5 in 52 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even close. Look at that wide cavern.
Yeah, big time. And then look now, and then these guys all played outside. Now
good stuff, Roman.
Go to Dwight Freeney.
Nice.
Go to Dwight Freeney.
So in any event, the thing that I used to watch when I watched Lawrence, and look, LT is the greatest defensive player who has ever lived. I'm sorry. No one's going to convince me otherwise. Maybe I'm prejudiced and partial. I don't care. LT is still the man. Lawrence Taylor, to me, I didn't care where that game was being played. If it was a big, big game, I didn't care if they were playing on the moon. I knew Lawrence was coming.
A few years ago, NFL Network did the top 100 players of all time, and it was a real big debate. And I think Lawrence Taylor was like number 3, and Jim Brown was 2, and then Jerry Rice was number 1. And you know, a lot of big New York, the New York, you know, area was really upset that Lawrence Taylor wasn't number 1. And obviously, had he been number 1, or and then Cleveland people were upset that Jim Brown wasn't number 1, and 49ers fans were obviously happy with their choice. But when you're a defensive player like a linebacker and you don't score touchdowns, you're considered a top 5 of all time. I mean, that shows impact.
Oh, sure. Freeney, 91 games on the road, 42.5 sacks. 89 games at home, 67.5 sacks. Yeah.
So not as much, but it's still a discrepancy at home.
And there is one, again, there is one with Lawrence, too.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing teams at home. You're playing teams at home. When those championship years, you've blown some teams out. You have a lead at the end. The other team has to throw the ball. So sometimes circumstantially, look, and you've got to be opportunistic about those sacks. I mean, the year JPP had 15 sacks, I think his rookie year in 2011. I'm pretty sure he had a couple of multiple sack games against teams that, you know, that were where the game was a little lopsided in terms of the score.
But you know,
which
what,
is okay, by the way.
But you know, and again, I've never really taken the time to look at those numbers. But here's what I want to mention, Roman. I want to build off of that for a second, because there are a lot of fans who come to games, and I've seen this in many stadiums around the league, where, you know, you get a headache by the time you leave the building.
Yeah.
Because they are really, really rocking it. And it is true. You know, they talk about Seattle's 12th man. They talk about the crowds down in Kansas City, the crowd in Washington at the old RFK.
Mm-hmm. Which I grew up selling hot dogs and pretzels in that stadium.
You know how loud that could be.
As a kid, yeah, exactly.
So, you know what? The truth of the matter is, a home crowd, when they really rock it, especially if you have a dominant pass rusher, there's absolutely an impact on the game. Yeah. Don't kid yourselves, folks. You really can.
I stood on the sidelines for the Atlanta wild card game in 2011. And when you knew that game was out of hand, you couldn't hear anything. And I always feel sorry for, you know, right, wrong, indifferent. I always feel sorry for a left tackle on the road, because I've been in that position. I remember Luke Pettigrew had 7 false starts against Seattle, whatever that year was. And I was like, oh, poor Luke, you know, because you feel for the guy. You know, even if it's the opposing team, you're like, you want everyone that, you don't want the left tackle to get embarrassed on television, especially because you can't hear.
All right, 201-939-4513 is our phone number. Get to some Twitter questions in a second. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Back to Giants chat, and we get a message from Ms. NYG Talent Scout.
Okay.
How about that?
At Lady Cachon.
Yeah, and she says, that's why the worst thing the Giants can do is win, need to stay in the top 7 draft slot. I want Amari Cooper.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe you could email Jerry Reese about that. I don't think
or Howard Cross.
Yeah. You don't want to tank games. You know, this isn't the NBA.
No, never. But no. I'm never a fan of that.
No.
Because as we've said before on this show, and I believe we've taken some calls about this, hey, as a player, you don't even know if you're going to be here next year.
Yeah.
So, like, why in the world would you even think about doing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, look at the most coveted free agent, for example, in the last 5 years is when Peyton Manning came back. His first year in Denver, I mean, they lose, I think, the divisional, the AFC Championship game to the Baltimore Ravens because of something that happened when he wasn't on the field. It was defense.
Right.
A guy misplayed the ball, caught a touchdown, you know, and again, you can have the best player in the league in football, and it's not guaranteed you're going to be in the Super Bowl the next year. All you're doing is giving yourself a better opportunity to succeed.
All right, so it's 201-939-4513. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. The Giants, last time they played the Redskins in D.C., it was the breakout game for tight end Larry Donnell.
Right.
He caught 3 touchdown passes in that game. Daniel Fells caught 1. So
right.
The Giants had 4 touchdowns out of their tight ends that night. It was a primetime Thursday night game, 45-14 in week 4. Now, look, the Redskins have given up 11 touchdown passes to tight ends so far this season. But again, a third of them came that night. You know they're not going to leave Larry Donnell alone coming up on Sunday, Roman. So do you still think – that the Giants would like to feature the tight end? Do you think maybe Daniel Fells gets to become more of the, a target than maybe Donnell? Do you think that they go back to just what they did last week and ran the ball when Andre Williams erupted for 131? If you were the Giants, what would be the adjustments you would make given the fact that you really beat up a team on their own home turf in the first meeting of the season?
Well, if you look at the way the Redskins are playing now, and let's just – I mean, let's not – before we talk about that first game, because teams make adjustments, they change, you know, and obviously the way you play a team in your division is always a little bit different than you play other people. The way this game is going to be played will be a lot different than the last 2 weeks, teams that don't typically play each other in Jacksonville and Tennessee. The Redskins have had issues with tight ends as recently as the last 2 weeks. Kobe Fleener from Indianapolis.
Colts.
I think he was – six catches, 100 yards, and he had two touchdowns. And
last week they gave up two touchdowns to a tight end also.
Yeah, the tight end for the Rams. So, I mean, this Ryan Clark, who's came up from the Steelers, is kind of getting up there.
Former Giant.
Former Giant Ryan Clark. And then Merriweather, their strong safety. I mean, they've continuously had issues giving up the seams for tight end. Now, if they decide to, you know, make sure Larry Donnell doesn't beat you, I mean, there's a guy by the name of Odell Beckham that can pretty much win most of his one-on-one matchups.
They've given up 28 touchdown passes this year as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, the strong point of the Redskins is their front seven. You know, they run 3-4 defense. They've got I have their defense right here. Obviously, they've got Jenkins, Baker, the nose guard, Hatcher, who came from Dallas. You've got Kerrigan, outside linebacker, who's really having a good season. And so that front seven is really solid for the Giants. I think in terms of running against that front seven, because you have two what's called guard bubbles, two uncovered guards, that you can get more push and get some more inside runs, hopefully break a few. I'd love to see another 50-yard run like Andre Williams had last week.
That was nice.
But, again, you got to do something in terms of a run to draw those safeties in. Then you can go over the top, and whether it's Reuben Randle, Odell Beckham, who's been playing lights-out football, Larry Donnell, or Daniel Fells, I think there are some still opportunities in the secondary. And just like the Giants defense, Paul, saw this year, when you couldn't stop that outside contain with those reads from those quarterbacks, offensively, the Redskins are going to be tested if their defensive secondary is still having issues by taking some of those shots downfield.
For example, David Amerson is the right corner. So he would be the guy who would usually play against Beckham.
Right.
Okay. He's not had a good year, all right? He's given up a 71% completion mark when targeted and four touchdowns. So, you know, he's had a tough time.
And then Breland, the other corner.
He's given up three touchdowns.
Yeah, I think he's a rookie, the other corner, Breland.
Yes, he is.
I think he's a rookie, so.
And then I'll give you one more. Perry Riley Jr., starting linebacker, has given up five touchdown passes this year and an 80% completion mark. So, obviously, he hasn't done a very good job covering the tight end.
Well, that means he's staying on the field. Either that means they're getting a lot of play-action passes on first, second down, because if you're giving up that many touchdowns, you probably are not on the field on third down
as a linebacker. You're out.
That means and that's a great stat, Paul, because that shows the teams have scored on the Redskins in non-obvious passing situations. So it's, you know, second and five. Here comes a big play-action. First, you know, here comes a big play-action. Not necessarily just on third and eight, third and long, you know, situations.
Well, you know what's interesting, Roman? I pulled up this number the other day, too, and it really blew me away, because when you talk about the Redskins and you look at the fact that they've certainly got some decent defensive stats in terms of yardage allowed, they are 25th in the NFL, giving up 27 points a game. But here was their best defensive stat. They are third in the NFL in defense, allowing only 19 first downs a game. 19 a game. That's a good number. Yeah. That's third best in the league.
Yeah, no, they are.
So that says to me they're giving up big plays, okay? And it says to me that when they're turning it over, they're giving up a short field.
Yeah, 100%. And, again, and I think a lot of fans don't realize that, and we've talked about this specifically the last 2 weeks based on the Giants' opponents. When you start to really peel the layers of any opponent, there's going to be something that they do really well. I mean, you're playing an NFL football team, Paul, so there are going to be some things that they do very well. We go back to Jacksonville 2 weeks ago. They were the youngest team in the league. They were the most disciplined team in the league in terms of the least penalized. And they were third in the league in sacks, and they got to the quarterback. And they were tight in the red zone. So You're talking about a one-win football team that has something that they still have things that are tops in the league in terms of their productivity. So, and again, this is going to be a dogfight. You got to bring your brass knuckles. This NFC East rivalry, because it's Giants Redskins.
What it is?
Only about 220 miles separate these teams down the turnpike. And as you know, I grew up in D.C. Watching the Hogs as a kid and all that stuff. And but my Redskins fanship died quickly April 21st of 1996 when I got drafted by the Giants.
Quickly, a couple of Twitter comments. Matthew Coyle says you can't preach commitment to victory and winning and then tank games. How true.
Exactly.
Absolutely. You can't double talk anybody, especially in your own locker room. Joe Cherney says, do you know any college pass rushers the Giants might draft? I'm going to forego that kind of draft talk right now because we've still got a few games left. But we'll get into that during the offseason. We'll be here all offseason, too. James Desi says, if the Giants transition to a 3-4 defense next season, which current players translate well? Well, that's certainly a hypothetical question. I would say this up front. They got a bunch of good defensive tackles.
Yeah, I think
Hankins
up front,
and Kuhn and Bromley.
Hankins, Kuhn, Bromley, Jenkins. I don't know that Bromley is a pure 3-4 D lineman.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those guys are.
Yeah.
Hankins could probably do it, no?
Yeah, Hankins could be a good nose guard. I mean, that's where he plays. You'd have to put Bromley at the D tackle, maybe Cullen Jenkins on the other side, and then start to draft some 3-4. We call them slugs, guys that just play their gap, separate, Derek, Gary Jeter, I mean, those type of guys.
Right now, it's not a good fit.
No, and then your linebackers. You've got to have, if you have four linebackers on the field, you put Devin Kennard, Jaquan Williams on the outside, and you put McClain and Beason on the inside. But now it's a different type of football that you have to play.
That's right. Absolutely.
Once again.
Okay, back to the calls. 201-939-4513. Ernest from Connecticut, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Hi, excellent. We're well. How are you?
Okay. It's a couple of questions. I'm always a couple of question person. But the first question is, do you think that if Rex Ryan is fired and John Harbaugh is fired, do you think is there any chance of them hiring Rex Ryan as defensive coordinator and Harbaugh as an offensive coordinator?
First of all, head coach. Oh, Harbaugh's the head coach? I don't think, knowing the – and I know the Harbaugh family, Jack, the dad, I actually know him very well. He's the head coach at Eastern Kentucky when I was at Louisville and all the way through. He's been there – was there for 30 years or so. And then, obviously, I went to Louisville last year. It was like Louisville Sports – Kentucky Sports Hall of Fame or whatever. We both made it together, and the sons and brothers were there. I know Jack pretty well in that family, and I know both personalities. I don't think Jim Harbaugh, San Francisco, I don't think his personality fits well in the Giants organization. And Rex Ryan has actually already said that he has no interest in being a defensive coordinator if the case were to happen that he would get fired from here. I mean, I think he's done well enough to deserve to be another head coach, or at least sit for a year and then really wait for the type of job that he thinks would be to his skill. I don't see Rex Ryan switching the green over to Big Blue. I don't see that at all. And then I don't think Harbaugh would fit in this organizational scheme.
Thank you so much for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. We have, let's see here. Debbie Downer, NYG fan, at Mr. Ruiz 81, says the Redskins need a quarterback next season. I expect them to lose. My only take on that is, well, I guess he's thinking about Mariota, and he's probably thinking that they want as high a draft pick as they can get their hands on because they want a new QB. But, I mean, everything – I'll be honest with you. Right now, things in Washington are pretty messed up. I mean, they don't know which direction they're heading in.
And I'll be honest with you, a la, Donovan McNabb a few years ago going from the Eagles to Washington, I think you might have a reverse situation because – If Nick Foles isn't the guy in Philly, I think RG3 fits really well in Chip Kelly's offensive system
There have been talks that he's going to be on his way out.
Yeah,
of Washington.
And I think they owe him up to $18 million of an accelerated bonus. I'm not going to misquote my knowledge of the
right. Well, I don't want to go there either.
New rookie contracts, but I've criticized RG3 in terms of him being a systems guy. I talked about this yesterday on the show, Paul. But I think RG3, and you know, I guess it'd be good for the conference for him to stay in NFC East, would be great in Philadelphia. I mean, that's the irony of that whole. So they could trade him, they could whatever. But the fact that, and now we're talking about the Redskins, you know, Giants opponent. Just from the quarterback position, and I know Jay Gruden well. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. If you have that reputation out there that you're not a classroom guy, you don't do enough of the things after practice in terms of film, in terms of leadership. There's reports in Washington that from writers that RG3 kind of isolates himself from the team now. He's so upset about this. He eats by himself. He dresses by himself. He's not this cheerful guy, this guy he was as a rookie when he was a Pro Bowler as a rookie, just 2 years ago. And I know how these things start, Paul. It's, you know, your agent puts stuff out there that says that, hey, you know, this guy's getting screwed. They don't like him. It's an issue between Snyder and Jay Gruden. And then when internally the head coach gets word of that, he goes, well, let me tell you the truth. Since my name's getting run in the mud here, and all I'm trying to do is turn this organization around. This guy sucks in the classroom. He's rehabbed, you know, as hard as anyone to get back to physical shape, but mentally he's not there. He doesn't grasp the concept. Now put that out there in the universe. So I think when you have those kind of issues,
it gets messy.
Yeah, and if RG3 is not the guy, and maybe they, I don't know, draft Mariota, who's probably going to go first overall to the Raiders or whoever have the first pick.
Raiders are happy with Derek Carr.
Yeah, and so I don't know where he'll go. I mean, last year was a weak quarterback class, and I don't know if this year's any better. I mean, look, Manziel went 22nd overall in the first round. So if they draft Mariota and they have to start all over again with another rookie, and if he doesn't work, I mean, that's a 10-year problem again.
Oh, you miss on a first-round quarterback? That is a very, very big problem.
I mean, the Redskins haven't been close to that. I mean, they haven't had a good quarterback since, I don't know, Mark Rippon in the early 90s. I mean, there have been some spurts of some guys that they had.
They might run Billy Kilmer out there.
I don't know. We'll see. But again, and I think that's why Giants fans, I bring up the Redskins information here just to keep it in perspective that Giants fans have to.
I mean, appreciate Eli.
Appreciate
How about
Eli
that?
Manning, because all this talk about Ryan Nassib and get him some reps and all that, and I talked about this yesterday. Look, I played with a guy in San Diego by the name of Charlie Whitehurst who, you know, he had the long hair and the beard. They say he looked like Jesus, and he, you know, was a fan's favorite and all this stuff. And, you know, just being joking, obviously. But he got a big deal from Seattle to co-compete with a job when he was a backup. He was back in San Diego as a backup. Now he was a third backup in Tennessee. And you have Mettenberger and the other guy they had in Tennessee last week.
Jake Locker.
He was carrying a clipboard, so the verdict was out on Charlie Whitehurst. So let's and look, some guys get to play because of injury, and we've seen it at the quarterback position all around the league, and the most famous one is Tom Brady and who he became after Drew Bledsoe got injured. But, again, I like seeing Eli Manning play quarterback because he gives the Giants the best chance for success. I think 5 years from now, Eli Manning will still give the Giants the best chance for success. I think at that point, when he's in his 14th, 15th year, I mean, look at where Tom Brady is now. He's still playing at a high level.
Yeah.
That's when you start to say, who can you draft? And hopefully in 2 or 3 years, you know, a la Aaron Rodgers, you sit behind a guy and learn how to play the position. And then it becomes a more gradual process.
All right, Roman, time for another spot. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for a free entry now at DraftKings.com.
That's DraftKings.com.
201-939.
We sound like Lenny and Squiggy doing the end of it. I don't think anyone knows who Lenny and Squiggy is on watching.
Yeah, Laverne and Shirley. 4513 is our phone number here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We only got about 10 minutes to go in the program. We're here every Monday to Friday on Giants.com from noon until 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's go. Let's see here. There's a Twitter question, a comment actually. Joshua's Whisperer says, from what you guys have seen this year, does Weston Richburg move back to center next season? Of course, when he was at Colorado State, he was a center primarily, had played the other positions, but the Giants had a need for him at guard coming out of training camp, so they had to move him there, and that's where he's played during the course of the season. But they've said all along, let's not kid ourselves, they've said all along he's a long-term bona fide center in this league. That's where he's going to wind up. When that actually happens is still anybody's guess.
Yeah, and let's be honest, from just an evaluation standpoint, I think, you know, the fact that J.D. Walton came in this came in here and, you know, he was 27 years old and he'd had a lot of injuries. He's 27 years old, only his fifth year. He had a lot of injuries. He's proven to himself that he can come in and start, you know, hopefully by the end of the season, 16 straight games. And I think that's good for J.D. Walton's career. But I think going forward, in terms of the future, I see Weston Richburg, as you alluded to, Paul, as the guy at center, where you just check that position off, hopefully for a decade, and you don't have to worry about it. But what J.D. Walton's done, and look, and you're always playing for your resume. I mean, we're all told that as players, whether your resume for this team, coaching staff, and all the other teams that are watching you. But, J.D. Walton, I think he's proven himself that he can come back and be a healthy player in the National Football League. And I think he got a one-year deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I think they have probably some teams that need a center next year, maybe on a short-term basis, and Kevin Boss replaced Sean O'Hara.
Yes.
In terms of like some type of short-term deal, maybe he goes to another team next year. I don't know. I don't try to evaluate free agency.
Actually, to correct both of us, J.D. Walton got a 2-year contract from the Giants. He is signed through next season.
Okay.
Just FYI.
Yeah, so.
Maybe he competes.
Yeah, you compete for Richburg.
Nothing wrong with competition.
And then J.D. Walton, I think, is a guy that's played multiple positions. If you look at his size, I mean, 6'3", 305, I mean, that's good center size. It's big enough, and he's versatile. And but, again, I think the center position next year, either way they go, is pretty much sealed. I think the right guard position, since we're talking about the offensive line, I think with
John Jerry.
Jeff Schwartz, you know, hopefully he comes back. I mean, he told me on the show on our Giants first and 10 that he's more comfortable playing right anything, right guard, right tackle. So I think you go, whether it's J.D. or Richburg at center, a healthy Jeff Schwartz at right guard, and keeping Pugh at right tackle, unless – you find another right tackle who's like a stud first rounder, and then you move Pugh inside the left guard.
There are a lot of moving parts, Roman.
Yeah, they are. But I think you only have to make one or two moves on an offensive line. And again, you have to hope that you may see another offensive lineman taken in the third round or second. I mean, I was a third round pick. I started 10 years out of my 12-year career. So you might see a guy that pushes Will Beattie at that left tackle. And I think in terms of, you know, it's all about fair, objective criticism. You know, sometimes Will Beattie gets criticized because he's not Tyron Smith in Dallas, or he's not Jason Peters, or he's not considered
Trent Williams in Washington.
You know, Joe Staley. I mean, he gets criticized because he's not a pro bowler.
He's not a mauler, and he's not a beat-em-up kind of guy. He's more of a technique finesse tackle.
Yeah, and I know you talk about his salary and all that stuff. Not you, but people – talk about it, and I don't like to talk about people's salaries or salary cap value.
It's
not relevant
right
now. Yeah, it's really about X's and O's, but I think he's done a serviceable job, and as long as he has the personal pride that you need to just want to get better every week or every season at your position, I challenged Will Beattie last year. Listen, pull out the
serious film. Injury we're talking about.
Yeah, serious injury.
Serious injury.
I said, you better go and get the best three or four left tackles that you look up to in this, and watch all their film. And see what makes them great. Look at your technique, and now look at your film. Things that you need to improve and work on it. I mean, that's what professionals do. So off seasons are shorter, and that's every position. I think quarterback, linebacker. I mean, you have to do those things mentally to get yourself ready to play for the next season.
And thank goodness for the Giants, Beattie's career is back on track.
You know,
he may not be going to Hawaii, but he's played well this year.
Right.
Antonio from Manhattan, you're next on the program. We've got 5 minutes left. You might be the last caller. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? How you doing, Roman?
Hi.
It's an honor talking to you guys.
Appreciate it.
Just want to touch real quick on the coaching staff, and I just don't want to see it touched at all. I don't want to see anybody removed. The reason why is because it's the first year of the offense. You know, everybody's going to come, and they're going to be more well-known with the offense next year. And I don't want to see, the defensive coach remove me down once the Perry Field, because then we're going to have another defense install and everybody's going to be a step behind. So I just want to see everybody just one more shot to tell you if they can make the playoffs. And if not the next year, then that's when we talk about, you know, maybe making some changes. But I just think it wouldn't be fair to the players or to the coaches if we remove anybody right now. What do you guys think? And thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much, Antonio. Appreciate it.
Look, I think injuries have definitely been a part of that whole discussion. And I'm looking at the injuries right now. I think defensively, you know, you
should
just
we get
lost
out the roll of towels?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a long one.
I mean, let's just go defense. Princeton Mukamara, Robert Ayers, John Beason, cornerback Travis Howard, you know, Matthias Kiwanuka, McBride, Tremaine McBride, Cooper Taylor. I mean, you know, Walter Thurman. I mean, you're talking about a big difference here in terms of what Perry Fuel would have liked to be able to do.
Sure.
And I think sometimes you're constantly, when you have those that kind of depth. I mean, don't forget, Perry Fuel is a defensive backs coach. I mean, that's his specialty. I mean, he created the three safety package. He created these alternative ways to put people in the best position possible. Stevie Brown came out of nowhere in 2012 and had, you know, 7-8 interceptions, led the league. I mean, Perry Fuel didn't forget how to coach. But again, you've got some defensive coordinators. I mean, we talk about Rex Ryan, just for example. He was a defensive line coach. I mean, he's a front seven guy. You got guys that are more linebacker type coach, so they put more on the linebackers. And then you've got guys like Perry Fuel. So I think if for some reason, again, and I have a lot of respect for Perry Fuel as a coach, if he's not the defensive coordinator next year, which is not up to me by any means, you can't bring in a guy that was a linebacker's coach or a D-line coach that becomes a D. I mean, it has to be someone that's been a D coordinator and played at a high level and knows how to deal with the intricacies of where today's game is going. I think Perry Fuel's done a good job of that, putting players in a position to succeed. I think the biggest problem, I think especially on the D-line, it's just guys just aren't winning their one-on-one battles. They're not shedding these tackles and penetrating and getting to the quarterback. Now, when we've seen 15 sacks in the last 2 weeks, only 7 from the defense line, correct? So, again, having the wherewithal to say, all right, let's start sending this rookie Kennard. Let's put other guys in a position to succeed. Let's blitz some corners and safeties off the slot. I mean, let's find creative ways to get pressure on the quarterback from the defensive line.
Hard to blitz, though, when 3 of your top 4 corners
exactly
are on injured reserve.
And I asked Coach Coughlin, like, how do you blitz and how do you send a 5th guy, maybe even a 6th guy, without compromising the integrity of the coverage? And that's something that you've got. I mean, it's a chess match out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just, oh, blitz, blitz, in. I mean, you get burned for big touchdowns, big plays. I mean, you're going to be a little bit tighter the next time you want to call that blitz.
All right, folks, before we sign it off, because we only have a minute left in the program, Tom Rock of Newsday tweeting right after practice was closed for the media portion. Eli Manning practicing, we expected that. McClain practicing off of the sore knee, we expected that. Herzlick also practicing again with coming off of the concussion. That was expected as well. And the guys who are not working today are Brewer and Jaquan Williams. Again, nothing unexpected there. So the practice report stays exactly the same as it was yesterday, except that Jameel McClain, who was scheduled to work today, is working.
Right.
So no headlines, no news. Eli Manning is out there, folks. Don't worry about it. He's okay.
Right.
He's throwing the ball, and I'm sure everything is on track for Sunday. Don't forget, Toys for Tots on Sunday. The Giants take on the Washington Redskins. Bring your unwrapped new toys to the gates outside the stadium, where the U.S. Marines will be standing by to collect those gifts and then distribute them throughout the holiday season to young children throughout the New York metropolitan area. We certainly thank you for your generosity. That'll do it for this edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are here Monday to Friday on Giants.com from noon till 1 p.m. Each and every weekday. For Roman Albin, I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you next time.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!